All right, if I could please ask our clerk to call the case.
325-0068, Vivek Bedi appellant, or I'm sorry, Vivek Bedi appellee versus Med Legal Solutions Inc. appellant.
Good morning, Ms. Skocilis. If you're ready, you may proceed.
Yes, good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court, Christine Skocilis on behalf of Appellant Med Legal Solutions. We've asked this court to review whether Med Legal can intervene as of right in the underlying action so it may have its motion to vacate the improperly entered nunc-pro-tunc order heard. That nunc-pro-tunc order is actively interfering with the orderly and efficient collection of Med Legal's federal judgment. If Med
How
Legal is
so? How so when you have priority in federal court?
I have priority in federal court with the citations that were at issue in federal court. Since then, appellant has, or appellee, I'm sorry, has issued over hundreds of citations to discover assets on various personal injury lawyers and has taken the position that if he served a citation to discover assets on those citation respondents first, he is entitled to collect the money regardless of the federal court's lien priority ruling, which
Now,
is
I
on
know,
appeal.
and I know, I respect that you're answering my question, but let me just ask, is that part of our record currently?
I think he filed them just after the record was prepared, so I don't think so.
And
But
that's, I know you're responding to my question. So,
I
but please
am.
continue with your argument. Thank you.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about what the trial court did to analyze intervention as of right below. And I'm going to quote, "I don't understand how a third party who's not a part of this litigation has any right to come in and complain about the judgment." But that's the very right that Section 2408 expressly creates, the right of a third party who is not a part of a litigation to come in and complain about a judgment or order that prejudices or injures its protectable interests. Med Legal is that third party here, and it was an abuse of the trial court's discretion to deny Med Legal's petition. As both this court and our Supreme Court has instructed, Section 2408 of the code is remedial, to be liberally construed, and mandatory. Intervention of right must be granted if the petitioner can satisfy three elements: timeliness, sufficiency of interest, and inadequacy of representation by the existing parties. A court's discretion.
Can we focus on sufficiency of the interest for a second? Because
Sure.
my understanding of that concept is essentially, did you have an interest at the time the judgment entered? And you've conceded that you did not, correct?
In 2022,
Right.
that's correct. But on October 9th, 2024, the court entered a collusively entered into, stipulated and agreed nunc-pro-tunc order that immediately gave or purports to give appellant a legal interest and a legal basis in collecting premiums assets that never existed before, and putting himself ahead of the line when premium was never previously involved in the case. There was no judgment against premium in 2022, and it is absolutely improper to enter a nunc-pro-tunc order to extend liability to another party that wasn't there. I know they call it a misnomer, but it's not a misnomer. It's a substantive change. It's re-engineering that judgment to substitute premium for premier.
There was
No.
never, there's no question. Actually, Justice Heddle, I apologize. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. But this might tack on to what you're saying. If they're simply fixing a mistake, they're fixing a mistake, and the fact that they went on an agreed judgment, that happens all the time, counsel. What's the matter with them coming in and entering an agreed judgment as opposed to litigating and having the expense of that?
A couple things. First, under Illinois law, a nunc-pro-tunc enter may not be entered unless there is some note, memorial, or memorandum in the record that reflects a clerical error or typographical mistake by the court, not by the parties. And that has to be shown
Well,
in
the
the
court signed
record.
the order.
The court did sign the order, but it did so without a motion, without a petition, say 2-1401 petition to alter or amend the judgment, and without any evidence that there was actually an August 1st, 2019, $1.43 million promissory note that the whole judgment is based on. And we know now, based on a deposition of Mr. Batra, who owns Premium, and affidavit submitted, that that promissory note does not exist.
Counsel, there was a promissory note, though, correct? And didn't it have some open-ended language that it was 175,000 and whatever else comes along the way?
It was about $175,000. It was open-ended, and it was dated sometime in 2020. So that is not the August 1st, 2019 $1.43 million non-proton order. Also, under Illinois law, if you have this like revolving line of credit type of promissory note, that 175 is not the floor. That's the maximum of the promissory note, which makes sense because if you're giving somebody an amount of money, you want to say, what's the max amount I am going to give you? Not the other way around. I agree to loan you $175,000, but
But this argument is really challenging the basis underlying the agreed judgment from 2022, which it's an interesting question, I suppose, but you did not have an interest in that litigation at the time that judgment entered. So isn't this really just a backdoor attempt to attack something you could not have attacked then?
I don't think so. Everything changed for Med Legal that had an existing concrete and enforceable right to collect premiums asset on the very date that that nunc-pro-tunc order was entered. If not Med Legal, no one is going to be able to challenge a nunc-pro-tunc order that was collusively designed and submitted to the court, again, with no motion, with no petition to alter or amend the judgment, and with no evidence whatsoever in the record of that supposed misnomer.
Well,
It is
there is
the law.
some evidence, isn't there, in the sense of now, when you say the record, you're talking about at the time the judgment entered originally, right? But
Correct. And when they
after
should
the
have.
but we do know after the judgment entered, I mean, to this idea of collusion, I mean, there's suggestions in the briefing and in the arguments of fraud, but ultimately, it's never really developed, and I'm not sure how relevant it is. But just to address it briefly. I mean, there are documented payments to premium after the judgment, right?
To appellee by premium after the judgment. Yeah. And that pro se complaint was filed 2 days in handwriting, pro se, after MedLegal filed its demand for arbitration on premium. And the stipulated and agreed judgment was entered very quickly thereafter. And if this misnomer is discovered, that is, you know, it's a really get out of jail free card for premium, right? There's a judgment against Premier on the books, but not premium. It shouldn't want a nunc-pro-tunc order to be entered. It should want to be off the hook for whatever it still owes appellee. So, what other reason than to keep the money in the family and to keep MedLegal from collecting its judgment could there be?
Counsel, let's suppose there's something rotten in Denmark. Isn't that another cause of action? This is simply a misnomer. We said premium, we meant premier, or vice versa. I can't remember myself right now, but that's all they're asking to do here.
I disagree respectfully. It's not a misnomer in the judgment because it had been premium the whole time and the judge actually accidentally wrote down, or the clerk accidentally wrote down, Premier. Premier Healthcare Solutions was sued. Mr. Batra answered on behalf of Premier. Mr. Batra answered and admitted that there was a August 1st, 2019 $1.43 million promissory note on behalf of Premier. Premier and Premier's attorney, I mean, Premier was represented at the time. Premier and his attorney signed everything for Premier over and over and over again. Premium doesn't exist anywhere. And if nunc-pro-tunc orders are meant to reflect what actually occurred, That court had no idea that premium healthcare solutions existed. It was never before. It may have been before him for jurisdictional purposes, but that's a substantive change. That's not the simple correction of a misnomer.
I understand your argument. Thank you.
Regarding timeliness, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because it's fairly straightforward, but Appelli does argue that post-judgment petitions may only be granted an intervention granted if intervention is the only way for the petitioner to protect his rights. And he offers post-judgment citation proceedings as an adequate alternative remedy for relief. But he is wrong. Post-judgment citation proceedings are collateral proceedings. They're for the discovery of assets and the enforcement of judgments. They're not a forum in which to attack the validity of an underlying judgment, which is taken as a given, or to relitigate orders entered on the merits. The only way to challenge an order entered in a merits proceedings is within that merit proceedings. And that's why MedLegal petitioned to intervene here, to ask the trial court to consider and rule on its motion to vacate the nunc-pro-tunc order. Regarding adequacy of representation, I think that's easily disposed of. That element is party-centric. The court, of course, is a neutral. It can't advocate for any party. So the fact that the court has the inherent power to police its own record will not suffice. And that order, if MedLegal is not allowed to intervene, is going to stand forever. That order entered off call without a motion, petition, or evidence at all, that's there forever, not just for MedLegal, who has a direct interest here, but every other creditor under the sun that Premium has. And that Illinois law should not countenance this. This court should not countenance this, and the trial court shouldn't have either. And so we're asking this court to reverse the judgment below and remand this case with the instruction that the trial court grant the motion to intervene and hear the motion to vacate the nunc-pro-tunc order.
Thank you, Justice Davenport or Justice Heddle. Any questions?
No.
There was also an argument, I apologize, regarding your not having
Oh,
a substantive.
the attachment?
Yes, thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. The 408E, 2408E does say you have to attach the proposed pleading to the petition to vacate. Now, Pelley's taking this to mean apparently it must be attached as an exhibit. There's no other way for it to be attached to the petition. But more modern case law says, look, you just have to be able to give notice to the court and the other party of what you want to do if you're allowed to intervene. And the motion to vacate was literally part of the petition to vacate. It was the pleading was styled,
What do you want to do?
I want to intervene and move to vacate the nunc-pro-tunc order.
Not the original order that's being corrected.
No, I want to vacate the nunc-pro-tunc order under 1301E. I should be able to do that challenge. I did it within 30 days.
And you
So I
want to
was.
be able, and you want to be able to do that, and that would revert everything back to Premier. And everybody agrees that there's no defendant named Premier that would be an appropriate party to that litigation.
And if that is actually the case, and there was actually an August 1st, 2019 promissory note in the amount of $1.43 million, let the parties go back and do it right and fix the problem. It's a problem they created. The court had nothing to do with that problem. It wasn't a clerical error on the court's part. There's nothing typographical about it. So if that's what they, if that's true, if there is that promissory note and they can show it to the judge and say, see, it says premium, not premier. Okay, but they haven't done that. And they need to do that because you can't enter a nunc-pro-tunc order without, again, some note, memorial, or memorandum in the record that reflects a clerical error by the court.
Counsel, you would agree they're clerical error by the court. I mean, in modern practice, attorneys send the orders to the judges. And quite often when I was on the circuit bench, I just signed them electronically, right? I didn't type anything. I just hit JPH and it signed it for me.
Yeah, and you know, on January 8th, Apelli's counsel did move to correct nunk-pro-tunk, a typographical error in the date that they wrote in that nunk-pro-tunk order, right? That's a proper use of a nunk-pro-tunk order. We all know the date. It was attached to everything that the judgment was actually entered, October 26th, not October 25. The judge granted that order right there. That's appropriate. But to go back and extend liability to a company that never been named in the case, that no one answered on behalf of, that no citation was ever served on. I mean, under Illinois law, it's really clear. The Supreme Court's been clear. The only way to perfect a judgment lien is to serve a citation to discover assets, and you have to serve it correctly. And there's never a citation served on.
If somebody's fighting, you have to serve it correctly. But if they're in agreement, do you?
Well, I don't know. Can a third party not come in and say, I don't think that citation? Of course we can. I think you can.
Even if you did not have an interest at the time, the judgment entered.
Yes, because the interest was created upon the entry of that nunk-pro-tunk order, creating a judgment that never existed before that immediately affected MedLegal's rights.
So, but for the entry of that nunk-pro-tunk order, there you had no interest at that time, and then after the nunk-pro-tunk order is entered, you suddenly have a cause, you have a liability.
Well, I have an interest that arose in September, right?
Correct.
And that nunk-pro-tunk order later entered purports to destroy lien priority and give Mr. Betty rights to collect premiums assets, and in his view, ahead of Med Legal, despite what the federal court said. Thank you.
Ms. Gotchless, thank you. You will have an opportunity in reply. Mr. Schwartz.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good afternoon. For the record, Marty Schwartz, for the appellee. So, Your Honors, the precise issue is whether the trial court abused its discretion in refusing to allow a judgment creditor to intervene in a lawsuit between a plaintiff and a defendant over a loan made by the plaintiff to the defendant, where the judgment creditor has nothing to do with that loan. Under the intervener's petition or their argument, any judgment creditor should be able to intervene in any other lawsuit where they have a judgment against the defendant, because they could be adversely impacted. And I think that, and then, sure, I would like to intervene in a bunch of lawsuits to slow them down, and then try and speed up the cases I am, where there's multiple, where a defendant has multiple lawsuits. And it's even, and even the more precise issue is for the whether the trial court abused its discretion when the sole purpose of the intervention is to object to a nunk-pro-tunk order correcting a misnomer. So let's start out with that. It's clear this is a misnomer. There is nothing in the record to suggest that there is any company called Premier Health Solutions. Zero evidence of that. So counsel is saying there's no judgment against premium that was entered initially. That's incorrect. If someone sues me and they misspell my name, the judgment is still against me. They could correct the judgment, they can correct the name, but that's the whole point of a misnomer is, and it relates back. So, when counsel
So
says,
it doesn't matter, Mr. Schwartz, that they misspelled your name from the very beginning on every single document all the way through judgment.
it doesn't for this reason. This would be one thing if there was two companies, and you sued the wrong company, and then later you learned, oh my God, that's an Arizona company. I got to sue the Illinois company. There's no dispute that it was Premium was the intended defendant. Premium's the one who got served. Premium's the one who responded. They call themselves Premier. Oh, okay. But under the misnomer statute, I believe is 2-401, as well as just the basis of nunc-pro-tunc and able to correct clerical mistakes. This is again, if these types of mistakes should not impact the substantive intent of the parties. And again, no dispute, the judgment was against Premium, even though it was called Premier. In terms of the timeliness of their petition, as counsel referenced, when it's post-judgment, the timeliness standard is different. You must show that you have no other remedy. And under counsel's position, every so-called fraudulent, collusive judgment that other creditors have no remedy. That's not the law. They cite cases that were based on, I think, the 1929 attachment law, as this court is well aware of. 214.02 of the Civil Practice Act has been expanded. They have rights to argue about priority. They have other statutory remedies if they think this judgment was fraudulent. And I want to say unequivocally, we deny that it was fraudulent, and we showed the evidence of the advancements. So with respect to the timeliness, they do have alternative remedies. And if this judgment's affirmed, I'm sure they're going to take the position when they're before Judge Schwartz that they do have those type of remedies. I also want to point out, counsel said that the misnomer, the order correcting the misnomer that she filed within 30 days. The entry of a nunc-pro-tunc order after a judgment is entered does not restart the 30 days. So if an order is entered 2 years later correcting the name, the defendant doesn't have a right, or the plaintiff doesn't have the right to then appeal the judgment. Again, we're only talking about ministerial mistakes.
Counsel, are you coming to that conclusion by logic or case law?
Case law, I can give you cites for that.
You don't need to if they're in your brief.
Well, Your Honor, I like to say that it was in my brief in the Seventh Circuit. I don't think they're in my brief, but in fairness to opposing counsel, if the court would like, I could send a letter afterwards. I do have the cites in front of me that I could read to the court that a nunc-pro-tunc order does not affect finality.
I'm not asking for that now.
All right, fair enough. I like to go to sort of the interests that the intervener claims for their right to intervene in this case. All the cases cited suggest that the intervener has to have an interest in the subject matter of the lawsuit, not the secondary effect of the judgment. The one case that's pretty close, we cited in our brief, In re Marriage of Perkison, which is a Fourth District 1986 case, where an employer was trying to intervene in a divorce case because I think one of the parties to the divorce case was trying to vacate the divorce judgment because her husband died, and then the employer would have to pay the widow if she wasn't divorced. And the court said, no, that's not the type of interest. That's a secondary interest. It's not the judgment in the divorce case that's going to be affecting you. it's the secondary effect of the judgment. We cited several federal cases that are the same way, and the Seventh Circuit specifically said a creditor doesn't have the type of interest to allow them to intervene. And again, if that was the case, you'd have creditors intervening in all these other lawsuits to contest judgments that they have nothing to do with the subject matter.
Can I
You
just ask a question?
sure.
Would you do agree though that there, as of the record at the time of the 2022 judgment, you can't point to one thing that would support the suggestion that Premier was a mistake and it was supposed to be Premium? I mean, there is nothing that the judge could look at, or the parties could show the judge, other than their agreement, that says, oops, it was a misnomer. I mean, there isn't anything that the judge would be able to look at, or you could show the judge, that existed at the time to support the misnomer position.
That is correct, with this caveat, though. When the
So it's convenient that Premier and Premium are kind of close, but heck, you could have made it Joe Schmo Limited. It could be anything. I mean, the court's just listening to the two parties saying 2 years later, now that there's a lien priority issue in federal court, oh, this is, let's make it Premium, Judge. It was always supposed to be Premium. I mean, you understand the suspicion, if you will, of the appellant as it relates to that.
Your Honor, I don't, for this reason. If this was a case where the judgment was against ABC Company, and then later on they're going after the MedLegal is going after DEF Company, which has the same principle, and we said, oh, that judgment against ABC, it was really intended. We really made the loan to this other company, DEF. There is no way that anyone could argue that the loan was made to Premier Healthcare Solutions. There is no such entity. This wasn't a way to sort of cheat them, play, hide the ball, sort of, we'll get the judgment against this company, we'll change it. It was as soon as counsel advised us that there was a the name was incorrect. The plaintiff and defendant both agreed. And MedLegal is not here arguing that it wasn't anything but a mistake. Again, there is no company called Premier. So how could you have a judgment?
So, isn't there a company called Premier? There is.
No.
Just not related to this.
No, there is no, there's a company called there is no company called Premier Healthcare Solutions. Absolutely none. There is a company called, I think, there might be another company, Premier Healthcare
Something.
Staffing or something like that,
Okay.
that has nothing to do with Mr. Batra. So again, this wasn't some kind of sneaky. A counsel says, oh, that it was filed 2 days after they filed, MedLegal filed for arbitration. Now, I don't know if there's anything in the record to show when Premium got notice of that arbitration, but let's assume it was some type of fraudulent intent. Then for sure we would have named Premium Healthcare Solutions. We wouldn't have made that mistake if there was some kind of attempt to defraud MedLegal. This was a mistake that again is not some type of bait and switch, and I too have had the had to think twice, the Premium, Premier, etc. And the other thing that I'd like to raise is in terms of the petition attaching a pleading, I don't know what pleading they would attach. I don't know what substantive relief are they just coming into. Do they want to vacate the judgment? Are they saying there's no judgment against premium and that the judgment against a non-existent entity should stand? That doesn't make sense. And I don't know what kind of standing that they have to contest a loan that was made between Mr. Betty and Premium, even though it was called Premier. Thank you.
Any additional questions?
No.
No.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. Ms. Skatchilis, reply.
Yeah, just a few things. Mr. Schwartz brought up the misnomer statute. That's 2401B of the code. And it says this, quote, "Misnomer of a party is not a ground for dismissal, but the name of any party may be corrected at any time on motion upon any terms and proof that the court requires." So that's the statutory language. That's what the legislature wanted to require if you're going to change the name of a party due to a misnomer. Some motion and some amount of proof. That was not done here.
Well,
I
it's
don't
only some amount of proof that the court may require.
that the any terms and any proof. And to that, to me, any proof requires at least some
Well,
proof
what follows any proof?
that the court requires.
So if the court doesn't require it.
Well, I respectfully, I don't read it that way. I read it as whatever minimum amount of proof the court requires, the court can decide what that minimum amount of proof is. But in any event, there needs to be a motion. So I actually think that statute hurts him and not helps him. And then with respect to, the lawsuits, creditors, this parade of horribles, creditors always interfering. This isn't like any of those cases from federal court where, a different judgment creditor has a case. In those cases, the petitioners were attempting to intervene in lawsuits that were ongoing, whose outcomes hadn't yet been determined. And they're hoping to come in and sway the judgment in a way to create a possible pot of money for them to collect in the future. Be like coming in and saying, no, I really think his light was green. I think he was fine. Don't find against him because I want to collect money from him first. That's not this case. That's not this case. The judgment has already and the merits have already been litigated and decided, and there's nothing speculative or contingent about MedLegal's immediate right to collect Premium's assets. So, unless there are any questions, I would just ask you to reverse and remand.
Nothing further.
Nothing further.
The court thanks both sides for spirited argument. We are going to take the matter under advisement and issue a decision in due course. Court is adjourned until the next argument. Thank you very much.
Thank
Thank you.
you.
Have a good day.
Thank you.